This is Arts Canvas, and this is Karina Winmoylan, and we're talking to Adrian Newstead. Good morning, Adrian.
Good morning.
Now, tell us a little bit about your book, which is really also, it's a memoir as well of your dealings in the Aboriginal art industry over the last, 20 years or 30 years?
For nearly 40 years.
Nearly 40 years, which means that you were there at the very beginning almost, doesn't it?
Well, not at the very beginning, but certainly if you look at the Aboriginal art market, it was only worth about $2 million in 1980 when I began, and it grew to over $200 million, and that doesn't even include what we call the secondary market, when art resells at auction and through art consultants thereafter. There's an enormous amount of art that's been produced. I like to think of it as like a giant gum tree that's thousands of years old, and finally it's chopped down and it throws its seed in a desperate hope of passing on the knowledge and the culture that's inherent in the tree. And in this particular case, we're talking about a culture that's over 40,000 years old, possibly 60 or 80,000 years old for all we know. And I truly believe that the people that began this movement, they were old people that grew up in the desert or in Arnhem Land prior to contact with Europeans and became mature adults before interacting, and so they practice their ceremonies and their culture in the same time-honoured manner as had been done for thousands of years. Nowadays, those same ceremonies may be performed in various places, but they're not performed at the places that were where they practiced them. Nowadays, Aboriginal people are living sedentary lives. They may live proximate to their country. Obviously, one of the major tenets that underpinned Aboriginal culture was kicked from under them when they became sedentary, along with, the other major tenets of their belief system, a totemism, eldership, ritual. Rituals changed, and in many ways, painting became a new form of ceremony, a new way of passing on stories to their young people.
This massive industry that's developed around Aboriginal iconography, is there a parallel to that in other countries that you've seen? Or is this extremely unique to Australia and the Australian Aboriginal culture?
Well, there's a bit of a parallel in Native American art, but of course, you know, America's been settled for 100 years longer than Australia. So, no, I can't think of anything. And in fact, it's interesting. The World Cup's about to be held in Brazil. I can't tell you how many times young Brazilian art students and anthropological students have come to Australia and come to see me and said, you know, we're here to study, how is it that your Aboriginal people have managed to elevate their traditional art into fine art and sell it for tens of thousands of dollars, whilst our native people are still selling trinkets by the roadside? And it's a fascinating phenomenon, and my book is about that. It's about the history of that, about the way in which the art became a commodity, but more importantly, the relationships between black people and white people that sustained the industry. And what I found is, you know, the title of the book is a kind of ironic title, The Dealer is the Devil. I gave it that name because it kind of feeds into the zeitgeist. But actually, the relationships that have sustained the industry, for the most part, have been quite exemplary and fascinating. And the journey that Aboriginal art took from the Stone Age to the white, the walls of white box contemporary galleries is a fascinating journey, and it's been assisted by certain people. Of course, there's been unsavoury elements that have attached themselves to the margins of what appeared to be a buoyant industry. That's all covered in the book as well as the issues. But it is my own personal journey through Aboriginal art, and from a rather naive private school boy who became a hippie, who met an old Aboriginal man who told him that putting art on people's walls would be more, do more to change people's attitudes to Aboriginal people than going in street marches which he believed were best left to his own people. And that journey, through him I met an Aboriginal man who worked with Charlie Perkins in the art and culture section. He became my business partner and we embarked on a fascinating journey into Aboriginal Australia. Eventually he died under the most tragic of circumstances. But I spent the next 20, 30 years travelling in Aboriginal Australia, meeting some of the most important artists, working directly with artists like Rover Thomas and not so much Emily and Warrie, but so many others, David Malangi. I tell the story of their lives in the book. In fact, the book covers the lives of the 100 most important Aboriginal artists across Australia, and it sort of follows the Aboriginal art industry as it develops and moves from one community to another, to another, to another. I kind of see it like a fire through the spin effects. It moves along a line. It's hot in one place for a short amount of time. In a sense, the Aboriginal art movement has always been about the art of the new, the latest, the hottest, you know, the collectors during a boom time, and Aboriginal art went through the boom time, just lined up for the art of the most important artists. Some art centres had up to lists up to 50 people long wanting the work of a particular artist before it even got into the market and the galleries. Such was the overhype of the Aboriginal art market in the late 90s and 2000 onwards, with what they came to call the Great International Art Bubble. At that time, I'd become the managing director of Australia's largest auction house, Deutsche Menzies. And I was selling over $10 million worth of Aboriginal art after having started in a little shop in Oxford Street, Paddington, and also responsible for their non-Indigenous white international and Australian contemporary art. So I was selling $70 million worth of art a year at the top of the art market. And looking back, as soon as the GFC hit, I retreated to my little valley out behind Mullumbimby and wrote a million words deprogramming myself on 40 years in the industry. And what the motivation I'd had when I started and what it all became. And then after I took it to some publishers, they said, well, that's not a book, that's actually two websites and a book, and this is the part that we think should be the book. And so I spent the next 5 years editing that and rewriting it and then putting my own personal story into it to make it very accessible and readable. I think it's the most important history in Australian art. I think that Aboriginal art is the most transcendent chapter in the history of Australian art. I think in 200 years' time, it'll be the one thing about Australian art that people internationally look back at and say something really, really important in world art happened during those 30 or 40 years. We have been a witness to it. I've been a personal witness to it. And it fills me with everything from joy and exhilaration to deep-seated anger at what's happened to Aboriginal people and how they've been manipulated. And you know, I mean, let's face it, we still live in a very racist country. And my experience with Aboriginal people has been incredibly life-affirming. And I found Aboriginal people to be amongst the most magnanimous people and welcoming people that I've had any experience of spending time with. You'd think they'd be far more bitter than they are, but I haven't found a lot of bitterness, really. I've found, wise counsel and close friendship amongst my Aboriginal friends, and it's all in the book.